Thanks, John. Yeah, so I think where we're headed for today is we want to really kind of put a fine point on the question back to the board around this plan, this vision, this roadmap, however you want to describe it, how well it aligns with the board's, through a policy perspective, with the board's priorities. So we really want to get to that question, but I know that there's also an interest in getting some feedback, either questions or ideas from the board on what you've heard today, both from public testimony as well as from the executive leadership of the department around different ideas, ways to actualize this plan, to actually turn it into implementation. So just some, let's start with some sort of general feedback in that realm around the ideas that have been shared today about how you move this to action, and any ideas that you haven't heard yet that you'd really like the department to consider as we take the next step in all of this. And I will make sure we leave time to really kind of close in on that dialogue amongst the board about how you see this plan as it's written aligning and where there might be gaps that you'd really like the department to be aware of so they can try to better align this before November when they bring it back to you for an approval. So let's talk about the concretizing of the plan ideas first. And I think just because the way it's flowed today, we didn't use like our formal hand raising. I can see you all, so there aren't too many of you. So I would just say, without talking over each other, go ahead, just take yourself off mute if you've got some ideas or questions. And I see Brenda's hand up.
Yeah, just a couple of very quick things. Bill, thanks for addressing the carbon footprint piece, but and I do think your division could play a key role in reporting out carbon footprint for each of the divisions and the agency as a whole. So that would be really useful information, just like the financial accounting is. But what I didn't hear was how each division's actions will move to reduce their carbon footprint. And so I'd like to see a little bit more there. So that's my response to the most recent comments by the staff. What I heard this morning was both encouraging in that I heard a lot of common ground. I heard a lot of people identifying things that they had in common, even though they may approach it differently. But I also heard, and it's my own belief, that we're no longer looking at business as usual. We're going to have to make some changes. And we're going to have to make some changes if we're going to continue to maintain the values that we have that come from our forests. So again, I'm going to come back to my very first comments from this morning and just ask people to think about how you can work together to come to solutions to this problem. I think that's going to be how we can advance here. Thank you.
I would also like to just earlier, Brenda talked about not enough focus in the plan on emissions. And, I really agree with Brenda on that. I think, we can only do so much with offsets and so much, not that they're both with sequestration, not that they're both really important. But we're not going to be out of this mess until we deal with emissions. And, so, I think we have a ways to go there, and it certainly starts with the department and including all the operations, including fire for the department. But also we really do need to be able to start with a baseline understanding of the emissions of all forestry operations in the state. And that said, I get in trouble with saying to people that I don't think that our industrial tree plantations are examples of climate smart forestry. I think I can get in trouble with just about everybody by saying, if you look at it through an emissions lens, there's not much forestry going on in Oregon that you could call climate smart. Now, the technology is not all there. I understand we don't have the chainsaws we need and the bulldozers that are electric, but we are moving in that direction very fast. And the department should be able to buy electric Ford 150s in no time, as well as timber operators. And before long, we're going to have a lot more equipment, such as heavy trucks, that will be electric. And it just made me think about the fact that you know, as we heard timber industry voices saying that wood compares favorably to steel and concrete in terms of a less of a carbon footprint. Well, if we reduced it even further, look how much greener it would be if we could reduce the emissions to all of those forest harvest operations. So I do would like to see some strengthening of this whole the focus on emissions, as Brenda brought up originally. Ben, I see your hand up.
Ben Doimling, for the record. I'll save my sort of general comments about the plan for a little bit later, but specifically, I really appreciated the division chiefs laying out their thoughts and ideas for this. And one thing I wanted to just sort of highlight, I appreciated Liz mentioning biochar as an opportunity, and the technology, like electric vehicles and machines, the technology is coming online. It exists. It needs some helping along, I think, to really get it to a place where it is cost effective. And I feel like the state can play a role in that. ODF can play a role in providing a platform for biochar to be rolled out, to provide pilot projects, to provide incentives, to provide a place where we can help that industry along, because it has huge benefits or implications for carbon sequestration, very long-term carbon sequestration. And I am really interested in what role the department across can play in sort of helping that.
Joe Justice.
This is Joe Justice, board member. Thanks, Jim, for your initial comments about how this is a vision and for Oregon. And we heard a lot of talk or conversation about extensions of rotations. And I think, in the document, it talks about voluntary extensions of rotations on private lands and so on, which I support. But I think we also need to be, I guess I would like that document to have, and you spoke about unintended consequences, and this is one of those things, that there can be things that can happen as a result of extension of rotation. It sounds like a simple thing, right? But it depends on the forest type, the forest condition, a number of things. And extensions of rotations also in very fragile communities with very fragile infrastructure could potentially be extremely impactful. And that's, of course, I'm very sensitive to that. So I guess I understand it needs to be in the plan. I understand it needs to be something that we need to be thinking about, considering as a potential, because Oregon's forests do have a great ability to store carbon in the form of a tree and in the form of a forest product. But that decision or as we generate policy related to extension rotation, I guess I would like to see some more language that makes sure that we understand that we're going to be thinking about what are those unintended consequences related to replacement or leakage, et cetera, as a result of that sort of policy decision. Thanks.
Brenda.
Yeah, thank you. Brenda McComb, for the record. Just following up on Joe's comment, and he makes a really good point, I think, and I just want to agree with that, well, first of all, extending rotation can be a way of sequestering more carbon, so we do have a lot of information about how trees grow. and we can project what that tree growth rate is out through time. But we also have a lot of information that different tree species grow at different rates on different sites. And so consequently, the simple solution of extending rotations could work fine in some places and may not work very well in others. So I think there's a more nuanced approach that I think needs to be addressed in the document.
Carla.
Well, I heard some things today that I'd really like to hear more about or learn more about. And, you know, I'm new to this board, so I apologize if I'm really lagging. One of the things that I talked to Dr. DeLuca, our dean of forestry, and he said there's a broader equation than just looking at the trees above the soil. He's a soil scientist, and he said the math really has to include what's going on below the soil, as well as, you know, a very linear equation. And I think I would like to hear more about the, you know, taking this from now more of an aspirational document, and I'd like to see better math. And I think that OSU, you know, we're just so fortunate to have OSU here. And I think he would be a key resource for us. The second thing I heard today that really resonated with me was the CLT mass timber and the wood products and the building material. I thought Ian McDonald made a very good point. Our family's involved in building a CLT project right now. We learned in New Zealand on a forestry tour that CLT is also more fire resilient than steel. And they showed us, you know, they showed us their research and results on that. I was involved early on in creating the organic and certified sustainable food markets. It takes years to do this. So it's really worth asking the toughest. It's only when you move the market in the behavior. And I thought, being on four recent forestry tours, I've asked the same question on all four of them. What would it take to move to 80-year rotations? And I heard the same exact response in just slightly different words, but there's too much fire risk right now. And until we address the economic of the needle. I'm also
Carla, you're breaking up badly.
Carbon markets really work, and which ones? Some of these carbon markets, they can be very expensive. I'm sorry. Is that better?
You might want to shut your camera off for a minute and see if we can hear you better.
Okay.
I think, Carla, go back to you were talking about the question around what would it take to do the 80-year rotation. Could you just start back at that? I think we missed the comment.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've been on four forestry tours recently, and I've asked, these are larger operations, and I've asked the same question and basically got the same answer. Slightly different words, but the same answer. And I ask, what would it take to motivate you to move to 80-year rotations? And the response in all four cases was, it's too much fire risk. And so it's not the economics, it's the fire risk that is, you know, is a top of mind concern. And I know to move markets, you've got to really address that economic reality. And I think that's where this plan needs to go now, is from aspirational words to what's the economic reality of, you know, trying to motivate those rotations. I think my fourth point is with regard to rural economies. The USDA scientists in the Wildfire Council took us back to 1982 and looked at the equivalent cut versus today. And the massive burnable fuels load that has accumulated the last 40 years. Chair Kelly, you talked about being humble. I think we're talking about 1/30 of our acreage. And so we need to be pretty thoughtful about, you know, what difference we can make where state forests only represent 1/30 of the total forested acres in Oregon. And I really appreciated Jeff Burns coming in and saying there's work that can be done on the federal forests. And certainly that really resonated with me. The chair of our wildfire council said 93% of our fires the last 10 years, this was through the end of last year, and I know those numbers have changed with the 2021 fires, have been on our U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands. And so, you know, really being thoughtful about coming back with better genetics and immediate plant back on some of those federal lands, I really don't think we should overlook the opportunity to go to 80-year rotations on those lands and, you know, to try and really build back carbon on the underutilized acres. Finally, I don't want to understate the importance of state land revenue to the Oregon Department of Forestry. We started there this morning. We have $117.5 million of fire costs to finance in 2.5 months into this new biennium. And so in addition to it being critical revenue to Oregon Department of Forestry, also the 151 taxing districts and our county partners, I want to see the financial impact and projections associated with this type of change on state lands. And Yale University, finally, Yale University Carbon Containment Lab said we can't grow our way out of this with trees. And I guess I really want to understand from our state experts, you know, really what they're trying to tell us. And, you know, that comment really, you know, resonated with me. And finally, to Danny and John, this is tough work. It takes time. It takes years. It's not easy. And I really appreciate what we're trying to do. But I also really very much realize how long it takes to make these type of changes.
Thank you, Carla. It was great to be able to hear you. Maybe going forward, we can both hear you and see you.
Looks like Chandra.
Chandra.
Thanks, Chandra Ferrari, for the record. So just a couple broad thoughts based on what I had heard from testimony, which I thought was really interesting. And I echo Brenda's thoughts that there's really a lot of encouraging threads there. I think there was alignment in that, you know, the concept of having this plan seemed like most people agreed it was a necessary step. However, I think there's some shared angst amongst all stakeholders, frankly, that seem to hinge on a couple things related to the accountability piece, the prioritization piece, the public outreach piece, right? I think folks, and they all kind of wrap to those concepts or those big categories, because I think when we start talking about measures, you know, folks are concerned about what that means. They're concerned about what climate smart forestry means. They're concerned about when we're going to do this. They're concerned about the impacts of what will happen if we do these actions. And then there's folks that are concerned that we're not actually going to achieve anything because we haven't articulated very concrete goals for ourselves. And right, there's urgent need for action. And so I think we're balancing this tension right now. And I think we need to think about how much more specificity we might be able to give to the plan if possible. And if not, then I think we need to think about putting in a little bit more detail into this plan related to how we're going to engage with stakeholders moving forward so that they can help inform how we proceed in getting to more detail, how we prioritize what we're doing, what's the sequencing that makes the most sense. Otherwise, you know, the tools that we should be considering to implement those goals and objectives that we should articulate. Because I think a lot of this too is about what tools are available. You know, is it incentives? Are there regulatory structures? Is there funding that's needed? All of those things are detailed things that we're going to need the community at large to be advocating for if we're going to really achieve what we want to here. And so it's important to start, I think, delineating the process to get there. And the other thing that I'll mention, because this was clearly a key thing raised by several stakeholders in several different public portions of the meeting was water and how we were addressing water. And I think that, you know, Danny and I had a, or, you know, had a little exchange. We there is watershed resiliency, I think, is included in this plan. And I think recognition that there's a connection between forest management and water, water quality in particular, was mentioned in this plan. But I think we could beef up the processes there, the connection between management and both water quantity and quality, and how that would be affected. And then I think I want to just tee that up also for our October conversation and our planning retreat, and being a little bit more intentional about addressing water issues, and understanding, I guess, the different tools that we have to affect that, and maybe setting some goals for ourselves in that space. Oh, one last thing. Sorry. But also hearing, I really appreciate hearing the actions from all the different divisions and how they're moving the ball forward. And I think same concern for me applies, or not concern, the question is just the roll up. And I think, again, having more crisp goals and objectives that we're trying to achieve in this space would allow us to really understand how what they're doing on the ground is helping to achieve those, and then what else remains to be done to you know, further move the ball. So that's it.
You know, another thing that I noted today in the testimony, there was a Mr. Barnes, not Seth, the other Mr. Barnes that testified today. And, you know, he talked about the wording of climate smart forestry, and saying, well, does that the opposite mean climate stupid forestry? And I think he has a real point. We do not need to turn off anyone. And the climate smart forestry term does have this basic sort of elitist feel to it. And I do feel that's wrong. I feel like climate informed perhaps is not strong enough. So as I sat there, and of course I love alliterations. This is not real good, but I've come up with climate committed. So I'll throw that forward for your consideration. Other thoughts? You know, one thing I also, you know, really hear that, you know, this issue of concern about unintended consequences. And, you know, I just really am hearing from all board members that I think, we all see how complex this is and how, the solutions are going to have to be nuanced. You know, I keep thinking about how politicians in the legislature all the time, they pass these laws, and sometimes they're dealing with really simple, simple stuff. And at the same time, they pass these laws that have terrible unintended consequences. I mean, we look at our whole accounting industry. I mean, it's sort of built on unintended consequences in tax law. And here, you know, we look at the complexity of what we are facing and the evolving science and all of this. And this is why I go back and start with those comments that where we do have to be humble. And but we have to combine that with an ability and a willingness to act and to act in significant ways. And I really hope to see us start to do that next year. And I think, Chandra, you were saying essentially we've got people on one side, you know, very concerned that we're not going to act in any ways that will have significant impact. And I get that and agree. And on the other side, we have, I think mostly industry, what I'm hearing, the big concern is sort of an edict around 80-year rotations. And I think that there's a lot of room and a lot of different directions short of an edict. As Joe points out, I totally agree. Having lived in Eastern Oregon and seeing all these different forests and forest conditions, and I know nothing compared to Joe's wealth of knowledge, but those kinds of simple approaches will bite us in the butt in a lot of areas.
Thank Ben was trying to get in the queue.
Okay, Ben.
I just had some more general comments on this, and I've really appreciated this exercise today and all of the testimony, all of the written testimony, and all of the engagement on this plan. And top of the list is a huge shout out to Danny for all of the work that he and John put into this. And this is not an easy task. And but just from a personal level, this going back to Jim's point from this morning about humility, this is, if we think about it, this is scary stuff. You know, our forests are changing, our world is changing. We're still living through the hottest and driest summer on record here. And, you know, in the face of that, it's a little bit deer in the headlights sometimes of, you know, how do we, in our little corner of the world, try to tackle such a monumental problem? But as we've seen today, there are tools and there are things that we can do. And it's personal for me. You know, our forest where I spend my time, we've lost 10% of our trees in the last 10 years. And I struggle with the rotation ages on our forest of, will our trees live to 80 years? It's more of a question of will they survive that long versus whether I want them to live that long or not. And so I'm deeply committed to big solutions. And I think we need to make some changes in how we take care of our trees here in Oregon. And the plan that we've been talking about is really, I think, really robust in a lot of ways. It's a systems approach. It's not trying to take just one thing. It's trying to do a little bit on a lot of different levels. And putting more carbon in the forest, taking that carbon out of the forest, putting in wood products. There's a lot of different things that all go together to create a cohesive plan that actually can have meaning and results when it comes to sequestering carbon. And I feel like the plan is in a very good place. And I think what we learned from our testimony today, and we will all continue to have feedback for Danny on how to continue to make this plan better. And I think he's heard a lot of it today, and he'll hear a bunch more over the next couple of weeks from us and from everybody else. But the last thing I wanted to say is sort of, I feel like rotation age is sort of really a big sticking point in all of this. And I agree with Joe that it is nuanced and it is site specific and species specific. But in general, where a lot of our carbon is stored is in our, you know, northwest corner of the state. It's pretty wet. And those trees can store a lot of carbon if they get older. But something we can't lose sight of is if we do want to grow older trees, we need to make sure that we retain the social license to cut those older trees and put that carbon into long-lived durable wood products. And that's a risk. If we grow trees too old, they sometimes don't get cut down. And it's important to keep refugia of old growth around. But if we're going to have a cohesive systems approach to storing carbon, we need to grow older trees, and we need to then cut those trees down and put them into real long-lived durable wood products. And there's some nuance there that we shouldn't lose track of. And just a couple of my thoughts as this, but a huge thank you to everybody for putting all this work into it.
Brenda and Joe.
Yeah, I just want to really appreciate what Ben had to say. You know, I think that there is nuance that has to be built into whatever solutions that the divisions come up with or private forest managers come up with. And I do agree to some degree with what Carla said about the Yale study saying that we can't grow trees enough to overcome the problem, but that it's making the assumption that our carbon footprint is going to remain the way it is now, which hopefully that will be addressed at some point. But in the near term, we're seeing pretty dramatic changes as a function of climate change. And the urgency to adapt to new climate conditions, the urgency to reduce our carbon footprint, the urgency to store carbon in as many forms as we can, wood being one of them, both living and dead, both in the woods and in buildings, is in front of us. And so, you know, I've heard several folks mention this is complicated work and it's going to take a long time to solve this. And it's true. But there are some things we probably have a pretty good idea that we can do with a minimum chance of unintended consequences and at least get started to make a difference. And I'd really like to see us make some of those decisions pretty early on and not drag this thing out too far, because quite frankly, you know, we're going to be fiddling while the earth burns.
Yeah, this is Joe Justice. I, you know, Jim, you talk about being humble, and I think something, as I reflect on this, like Robin asked us to do, and this is a good conversation as we kind of reflect on this plan. And a lot, you know, in many places in the plan, it talks about sustainable wood flow and preserving our forest products infrastructure. I think we need to be thinking about, is it appropriate to be growing, increasing our flow of wood products? And that's about being humble, being able to understand, to much to what Brenda said, where do we choose to store this carbon? And I hope that board members are open to that idea and that thought. You know, I live in a rural community. I grew up in a rural community. I'm going to go to a board meeting tonight at 7, a school board meeting. We're going to talk a lot about poverty, because we always do. You know, I live in a very poor community. That poverty is a real issue, and a natural resource dependent community that I live in. And in my perfect world, as I reflect on this, how can we grow? And this really, we're surrounded by federal forests, right? We're surrounded by federal forests that are heavily overstocked, in drought conditions, like we saw on maps earlier in presentations, that I think I know often what the outcome, I think, is assured of a lot of what the outcome is. So I'm very interested. And I don't know how, you know, this body, you know, accelerate our pace and scale. And certainly that's something that's very near and dear to me. And what we can do, should we be looking at trying to grow this industry, industry, and I'll be a broken record here for a second, this fragile industry that we're losing our ability to manage. We're losing the workforce. We're losing the people. And that's urgent. That's happening right now. I mean, that's happening, you know, today. And I don't know how we build that in, and maybe, I guess that's maybe a question for the department to think about. What can we do today to really begin to help the infrastructure, the workforce, and maybe potentially grow our forest products community, forest products that are coming out? And also, you know, we talk a lot about mass timber, and I mean, there's something we do really good in Oregon. We make forest products. We're darn good at it. And is that truly where we can have the most effect? And so I hope we're all very open to that thought process and that idea. Just end of comment. Thanks.
I'm wondering at this point whether it would be useful, Danny, to put you on the spot and tell us if you've heard any clear messages, if you've heard any confusing messages from either the board or others. Any comments at all?
Get everything turned back on here. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
So Chair Carelli and members of the board, I really appreciate the conversation that you've been having. I've been dutifully taking notes. And I think that they're, combined with what we heard earlier, I think that there's definitely some areas where we can look to create more clarity. I'm just ruminating on the things that I've been hearing. I think that there's definitely some easier parts to fill out, and we can do that. And then I think that Some of the conversation that has been taking place is it's got into a social conversation. What society and the policies that you set, how do those interact with the broader society? And as a roadmap, I think that the climate change and carbon plan can help to kind of guide the ship of the forest sector in Oregon along those lines. But, you know, I'll go back to Carla's comment too about the Yale stuff, that it's going to take a lot more than just forests to adapt and mitigate. So yes, there's definitely some stuff that we can utilize and can incorporate, and I look forward to more conversations as I work through this. I'll probably be contacting each of you for some clarification.
Danny, we encourage you to do that as you do need clarification, following up with any of us or certainly any of those who have provided testimony, obviously. Also, Nancy, not to put you on the spot, but you've been listening a lot. Any reactions?
Well, thanks. I have been striving to listen a lot today and learning a lot. I'm struck by a few things. One is, and it's not to say that there aren't other examples, but as I've listened to the discussion, particularly this afternoon, the department having a climate change carbon plan is somewhat unique in that it's, you know, a department-wide look. And a lot of the work that the board does or the agency does is really driven by the governance around the statutes that have us looking more specifically and working with the board on state forests or private forests. And so this is, to me, just, the challenge for the opportunities to make improvements here is, I think we're doing something that's kind of unique for the department as well, to have this broad of a look and to be that interdependent and collaborative across, which is super inspiring. And I think you really see that and how it's resonating with the executive team here today. I think there are some of the conversations here that, it's a lot to digest, but I will be honest and say that as I recently went back and, read through the executive order, I think that we can strengthen and should strengthen what really the vision is around reducing greenhouse gases. And so, I've been hearing that theme, but I also get it in that, the executive order was pretty clear there. I was struck, with there's this desire to have more specificity or targets or goals, right? I do believe, and I think, Jim, you set that up well this morning, where it's really going to be in future decisions that the board will have in your normal processes of your work plan. And in all of those, which I think would get at, in part, a little bit of Chandra's comments, and that we could probably make that clear perhaps in this document, and that is, decisions that really trigger change will always include a public involvement process, consistent with public meeting law, et cetera. Honestly, the richness of this discussion, I hope, encourages and builds trust with the public and stakeholders that this board is engaging and that this type of engagement will continue as decisions are teed up to be made. There's definitely been a lot here, and it's also exciting. I could reflect on a number of places that the divisions and programs reported on that they're, the notion of attention to and thinking about our work through the lens of climate change
it actually has been going on. And I think I hope you heard that in some of what the folks talked about, the team members talked about here today. And yet we know we have in front of us working and supporting you bigger policy decisions that would create perhaps greater hope relative to, you know, really mitigating and or adapting to climate change and reducing the greenhouse gases. So I think we look forward to your work and we want to support Danny and John going forward. And it's a short timeline between now and November. And I would expect that we'll continue to have a lot of dialogue internally as well as with our stakeholder and public. So thanks, Jim.
Thank you.